killing a few and destroying some other equipment and vehicles. It's really, really unprecedented. There was also footage, you know, as the 5,000 rocket barrage was coming out of Gaza, that was, you know, sending the Iron Dome into a frenzy. You know, forget any ability of to intercept there, as Israel is really having these rockets rain down on it. Unfortunately, as it's mentioned, the attacks on civilians have already started. Indonesian field hospital in North Gaza was struck, and there's already casualties accrued from there. Israel has, the Zionist entity has declared that it would officially has begun its quote-unquote retaliatory operation. Of course, we're expected to see attacks on civilians come out of that. There's reports that operation by Israel, these strikes by Israel, will spill into southern Lebanon, targets that they determine that they want to strike there in their quote-unquote northern front. But of course, already we see Israel for the first time really start out as the militarily inferior party to this latest counter operation by the Gazan resistance. About a million Israelis are preparing to, you know, Israelis in quotes, preparing to flee southern Israel as the Gazan resistance fighters take over settlements, take over Zionist military bases. There's already footage of that, of them scurrying to flee. Again, we're kind of waiting to see what transpired, because already in just the span of a few hours this morning, so much has happened. Within just a short amount of time, the Palestinians' resistance fighters have completely swarmed not only Israeli bases, but also Israeli settlements from both the land, sea, and the air. Already three settlements around the Gaza Strip have fallen into the control of the Palestinian resistance, and Israeli occupying army announced the loss of control of an Israeli military base in the north of the Gaza Strip. I believe that was the one that was ambushed. And like I said, like, this is just it's amazing. It's amazing. It's just okay.
Julia.
Yeah.
All right, go ahead and get your thoughts together. I'm going to come back to you in a second. I want to welcome Mazin Qumsi, a Palestinian scientist and author from Bethlehem. Mazin, Julia was saying that completely caught the Israeli regime off guard, this elaborate and really, really high-level retaliatory operation dubbed the Operation Al-Quds Flood. Now, Mazin Qumsi, I'd like to ask you, what happened? The Mossad, it prides itself on being possibly the number one security and intelligence apparatus in the world. It thinks it's better than the KGB, the CIA, but yet it didn't see this one coming, did it? So what do you think happened? And your thoughts on the Iron Dome system that really hasn't held up too well today. Number of fires, number of targets hit within Israeli territories, and not just a small number, a significant number of targets.
Yes, indeed, this is an amazing, you know, it's an interesting word, amazing, but also, ironically, was predictable. Even Israeli intellectuals issued a statement just a couple of months ago titled The Elephant in the Room, where they talk about the hubris of the Israeli leaders thinking that normalizing agreements with the Arab Gulf states and Saudi Arabia will save them somehow from having to face up to their crimes vis-a-vis the Palestinians. and hence the word the elephant in the room. The elephant in the room is the Palestinians who are ignored, the victims, basically. And this is the underestimation of the victims. That is a classic for what I call the habri of power that colonialists always have, thinking that they can manage everything. Of course, they cannot manage the local people, especially when they are a victim population of 15 million Palestinians in the world. You cannot underestimate them. I believe they will continue to underestimate the Palestinians and the resistance forces because that's just the nature of their mentality. But I think eventually the victims will have their say, and they will be able to achieve freedom and justice.
And that's a really good point, Julia, that Mr. Mazen Kumsia made. You know, it seems like the Israeli regime still has this mindset of 20, 30 years ago, where we have all the best sophisticated weapons in the world. Palestinians, they have a few sticks and rocks. What are they going to do to us? We're going to take what we want, when we want, how we want. But now, with the level of sophistication we're seeing today of Palestinian rockets and drones, do you think it's time, or do you think that perspective, that narrative in the Israeli minds is so basically set in stone that it cannot be reevaluated? Or do you think they have the capacity to reevaluate the perspective on the Palestinians' capacity to respond to atrocities against them and consequently make some adjustments, start changing the behavior towards Palestinians?
Zionist entity's narrative of invincibility, of superiority, of supremacy, it was just that. It was just a narrative. And narratives don't hold true to the material conditions of warfare, of resistance, of reality. This isn't the first time, actually, the Zionist entity was confronted with the shattering of its own myth. We saw that in the resistance against the occupation in South Lebanon. They waged their first major defeat on a large scale in 2000, once Lebanon was liberated from the occupation, again in 2006 when they were defeated after trying to wage a war against Hezbollah in Lebanon. And again, with the mostly civilian-led Gaza resistance in 2018, I remember Israeli military officials saying, "We can't win this war of balloons." You know, when Gazans were launching incendiary balloons across the border. So, and then also between that time, in the last 5 years at least, the Israelis were constantly watching their security eroding. They were confronted with the reality that they were inferior, actually, militarily speaking, against all factions of the resistance axis. And this really came to light that they couldn't confront not only Hezbollah or Iran, but the Palestinian resistance itself alone in 2021. Once the unified Palestinian resistance dealt a huge blow to the Zionist entity, that actually led the Zionist entity itself begging for a ceasefire at the end of the resistance operation. So this myth of invincibility, it's been shattered years ago. It's pushed Israel into existential crisis, because no longer can its narrative match with the reality and match with the equation on the ground. So we don't really know what kind of course it's going to take, how it's going to try to reevaluate and rehash its narrative that at this point will try to beg for any kind of justification of its existence. Forget superiority or forget supremacy at this point.
Thank you. And Mr. Mazin, Kumsia, to Julia Kossum's point, you remember the protests with those incendiary so-called devices, the balloons the kids would send up. They would cause a few trees on the other side of the fence to burn. no one got hurt because of those. Yet Israeli snipers sat up there on that fence and they picked off young boys and girls. Over 214 Palestinians were killed and over 18,000 wounded by sniper fire. I remember Ashraf Shannon joined us back then in live coverage during those protests. I think it was 2018. And I remember he was saying that the kids are so far from these soldiers, they cannot inflict any kind of harm upon them. Yet they were sitting up there using live fire and shooting in the chest and in the head in response to these balloons and these rocks that these kids are launching. So, you know, Gazans have really put up with a lot of atrocities, a lot of unjust, disproportionate response by the Israeli regime. And I guess you don't have to be brilliant or to assume or deduce that the fact that someday there's going to be a response on this level to all those crimes, and that's leaving out all the atrocities at the Al-Aqsa Mosque in Jenin, in Nablus, in Huwara, in the occupied West Bank, just in Gaza alone.
Indeed, what you are saying is correct. There's a predictable that the victims will eventually rise up and challenge their oppressors. This has happened repeatedly since the first Zionist colony in Palestine, 1880, until now. We have had 14 or 15 uprisings. We have had a number of conflicts, a number of problems. The Palestinian people will not give up until they have their freedom. I think what is remarkable and what will be sad to see, of course, is that the Israelis will not be able to get their quote-unquote retaliation from Hamas or from the resistance. So they will retaliate, as usual, against the Palestinian innocent civilians in Gaza. So this is something we worry about, of course. The innocent civilians pay the price for the habri of the occupiers, for their lack of ability to face the resistance. So I think this is a problem, and I think this time it will be also very bloody in terms of perhaps hundreds, God forbid, or thousands of civilians will be killed. But I think eventually, as I said, the elephant in the room is not going away, and that is the Palestinian cause. And I think the biggest victim, if you want, that will come out of this, or the biggest loser will come out of this confrontation, is actually the supine Arab regimes that have normalized with Israel, including some Palestinians and the Palestinian Authority, etc. I think they will come out as losers, because they will realize that all their begging and pleading at the UN and at the feet of American imperialism and the Israeli Zionists are not going to work, and that the only way you can face an oppressor is to face an oppressor, not to beg an oppressor, not to plead with the international community that has already shown its lack of care about Palestinian civilians and so on.
And I'm glad you mentioned Palestinian civilians. I want to put that question to Julia Qasim from Beirut. Now, Julia, the 11-day war of 2021, there were at least 256 Palestinians killed. 66 were children. Okay, I mean, is that not a crazy? I mean, and back in 2014, I remember 2,260 or 62 Palestinians were killed, Julia, in the 50-day war that summer. That started, I believe it was in June or July, and it lasted 50 days, and I remember 550 Palestinian children were killed. Astonishing. So we have 11 days, 66 kids killed. We have 50 days, 550 kids killed. We're averaging about 10, 12 kids, children, a day killed by the Israeli regime. And you know the kind of apartment buildings and all civilian infrastructure that they level. So, I mean, can you speak on Israel's, when it comes to responding to anything in Gaza, its deliberate and calculated war crimes that it commits with impunity against Palestinian civilians and civilian infrastructure.
Yeah, because it's more of the case that the civilian population of Palestine and this civilian infrastructure, it's not quote-unquote collateral damage, which is ugly enough of a word in itself. These are targets. Mm. The Palestinian community and the Palestinian civilians, they're all a target for Israel. Israel's called the Palestinian children a demographic threat. Israel routinely targets Palestinian infrastructure to force the resistance, which organically comes from the people, unlike their foreign-sponsored expanding military base. They do that to force them into concessions and force them into surrendering their resistance. Because, again, it's another testament to how militarily they can't live up to the Palestinian resistance. They also had this tactic of targeting buildings, civilian infrastructure buildings, depending on what level of negotiation they wanted to make. Like, for example, in the last summer 2021 assault, they moved to targeting larger, more commercial buildings to try to, force a reaction from the slightly more wealthy segments of the Palestinian population in Gaza. So it's a tactic. It's a tactic that was used also in Lebanon in 2006, the so-called Dahiya Doctrine, where Israel targeted the heavily dense population of the southern suburbs of Lebanon, which are mostly Shia, mostly people that they perceived were supporters of Hezbollah. And the biggest implication of the Dahiya Doctrine was to target civilian areas. So it's not just a sick and senseless act of quote-unquote, again, using this term with a grain of salt, collateral damage, but it's integral into their depraved tactics because Israel does not have an ethical standard of war. It's completely spawned out of terrorism against civilians, the ethnic cleansing of Palestinians, the forced removal and forced murder, and the attempt to break the spirits of the Palestinian people, which ends to deprive them of any hope for a future, all of which goes down to explaining why we see these horrible, horrifying attacks against children come up again and again every time Israel launches an attack on Palestinians. Children are also prisoners to the Israeli regime. They're abused in prison. They target and attack children in that respect too. So again, this is unfortunately the reality of Israeli brutality.
Thank you, Julian. Mr. Mazen Kumsi, if you could allow me one moment to get our viewers up to date. These are images out of Gaza City. It's about noonish in occupied territories, a little past noon, and but for the last 5 or 6 hours, we've seen a barrage of rockets, over 6,000 fired by Palestinian resistance against cities throughout Israeli occupied territories. I said thousands. That's at least 5,000 by the last count from the Al-Quds Brigades. That's the armed wing of the Palestinian resistance faction, Hamas resistance group, I should say, from the besieged Gaza Strip. Reports say that at least a handful of Israelis have been killed. We've seen fires erupt in Ashkelon and Hevarat. These are central cities, or central city of Hevarat and Ashkelon to its east. We've seen the Hamas resistance movement mention that Islamic Jihad and Lion's Den have pledged cooperation with this operation. And now we've seen Hezbollah, the Palestinian resistance movement, urging Arab and Islamic countries to throw their backing behind Palestinian resistance in today's campaign. Now, the resistance movement has dubbed this operation, pardon me, Operation Al-Quds Flood, and said it is in response to continued Israeli violations against Palestinians, a number of atrocities committed this year alone, in escalation actually in the streets at the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound, on a daily raids on refugee camps in the occupied West Bank, frequent attacks on the besieged Gaza Strip itself. It's all culminated in this response that we are seeing today. Supposedly, the fence there on the so-called buffer zone fence has been breached, and the Al-Quds brigades have infiltrated areas. The Israeli regime is saying by land, air, and sea, Israeli cities and towns have been infiltrated. And we've heard of skirmishes at police stations, in the streets and settlements, resulting in deaths. A police commander has been gunned down. A number of police, Israeli military vehicles and police vehicles have been commandeered by resistance fighters. Mazin Kumsie, Hezbollah just mentioned before, one second, the breaking news. Hezbollah says the will of the Palestinian nation and resistance forces only options to confront Israeli occupation. We spoke about this in depth earlier with our other guests, that Palestinians have truly exhausted all resources at their disposal to try to get some justice against the Israeli regime. Now, Mr. Mazin Kumsie, Hezbollah earlier said that countries should think twice after seeing the images today of normalization with the Israeli regime. It seems like normalization, not only did not any of these countries not get any concessions for Palestinians, the UAE, Morocco, Sudan, Bahrain, they're all in it for themselves. But guess what? Nevertheless, it has hurt the Palestinian people and cause. The regime feels emboldened to do what it does in the streets on a daily basis to Palestinians, knowing that there might be other Arab leaders that are lining up to normalize with the regime while it is doing, I mean, one thing, normalization did not help Palestinians, but do you agree that it has in fact hurt them more than before normalization?
Any kind of normalization between Arab regimes and Israel in public does hurt the Palestinians. But we have to remember that many of these regimes have already normalized for decades with the Zionist colonizers and have already had under-the-table relationships with them, including the Saudi regime, by the way. And so this public declarations and so forth adds insult to injury, so to speak. So I think, yes, indeed, I agree that they should reflect on the future, because as many have warned them, you're betting on a losing horse, basically. Zionism is not a winning horse. It will lose eventually. Why will it lose? Because it's a colonialist, supremacist ideology that oppresses millions of people, that caused millions of refugees, that continues to kill children, and it will never win. It will never win in this country or in any other. I think that's a losing horse, and they keep betting on it, thinking that that will work. I just don't think it will work for them. As shown in history, how Israel dumped its allies, like the South Lebanon leaders, militias that worked with Israel. Israel will dump those leaders whenever they want. And so I think you don't collaborate with such thugs.
Thank you, Mazin. And Julia, I like what Mr. Kumsie has said, that the regime has this colonial supremacist ideology. I mean, when the ideology is systemic and racist by nature, it doesn't matter how strong you respond, like what we're seeing today, you can never really change its perspective. You might get it to think twice about carrying out atrocities, but it's going to still harbor those feelings and that perspective of racism and hatred, and it's going to want that apartheid, even if it has it at hand or not. Basically, there's really no coming to terms with the ideology of the Zionist regime, is there, for Palestinians?
Well, no, honestly, like I was just telling you a little bit earlier, is that the ideology, it comes up short when it's matched with the material conditions of the ground, the material conditions that are showing that Israel is it's an inferior fighting force, it's inferior in its military and fighting capabilities, and particularly because it's an ideologically based society whose ideology is based just based on mythological supremacy, that it won't really ever be honest with itself in assessing. Okay.
Julia,
and really,
I don't mean to cut you off. Really quick, let me get explain what we're witnessing on the right side of our screen, and I'm going to share this with you and Mr. Kumsi if you're not watching Press TV. But on the right side of the screen, there is a fire in a part of town apparently hit by resistance rockets. In the middle of the screen, we're watching a fence being breached. And then earlier we saw young Palestinians on top of a burnt Israeli tank celebrating. And then on the left we have Gaza City, where rockets are being fired toward occupied territories. But right now it seems like there's some calm to some extent. But what I want to ask you, Julia, Israeli media has also reported that Hamas has effectively taken over towns near Gaza. Are you surprised at this level of response by resistance that we've seen today?
Honestly, we're all surprised. We're all surprised because the resistance has really caught us by surprise. Just the sheer intensity of all of this transpiring in just a few hours, it's remarkable. It's amazing. It's bound to happen, and everyone knew it was going to happen, but it's another thing to actually just see it happen so almost so effortlessly, I want to say, because it was just a few short hours that Palestinian resistance, following launching 5,000 rockets into the Zionist entity, ambushes military bases inside the occupied territories. It has basically its youth and civilians drag these confiscated armaments into Gaza, burning them in celebration. And now Israel's taken at least a few towns. I mean, sorry, the Palestinian resistance has taken at least a few occupied towns at this point. It's caught everyone by surprise, and that's particularly what made this occupation, this retaliation against the occupation so successful, is that element of surprise, is that culminating spirit and capability demonstrated by the resistance over the years. That hit Israel at a particularly weak point, and weak point in its morale, weak point in its security. But at the same time delivered this punch when it was not expecting it.
And Mr. Mazin Kumsi, thank you, Julia. Mr. Mazin Kumsi, we have also breaking news that Palestinian resistance forces have seized a number of Israeli military vehicles and have taken them back into the besieged Gaza Strip. I'm going to put that same question that I put to Julia to you. Are you surprised? I remember when I was a child and there was that boxing match in Zaire between George Foreman and Muhammad Ali. George Foreman was such a huge, towering figure. A lot of people thought that he was much stronger and hit harder than Muhammad Ali. But you know what? Muhammad Ali exercised the patience. He let George punch himself out for about five or six rounds before he unleashed a volley of punches and really caught George tired and out of breath and took home the victory. And everybody likes to see the underdog, especially the Palestinians, what they've endured at the hands of the Israeli regime for so many decades. You know, give him this knockout punch early today. I mean, we don't know how it's going to end, but we know how it started, and it really started as a surprise on a huge scale and of really unprecedented magnitude. Your thoughts on how this caught off the... And I like what Julia said, Mr. Kumsi, as far as catching this regime at a low point in its morale. We know they had some serious divisions over this judicial overhaul bill. We've seen 38 weeks of straight protests. We know a lot of Palestinians are unhappy with this extreme far-right cabinet. Israelis are unhappy with their these extremists that are in Netanyahu's current cabinet. Your thoughts on what a surprise this was, and how when there are fractures within the occupying regime, how a firm response is going to be difficult for them?
As I mentioned earlier, I don't think it's unpredictable what had happened. So I actually was giving a series of talks in the United States just about a month ago, where I gave talks in 12 states, and in every state almost I was asked about what to happen, and I kind of predicted that the resistance will not be vanquished, and that Palestinians will not be vanquished, and that they will rise from the ashes in surprising ways, and this is indeed what one sees. Any kind of serious analysis of history shows that unless you obliterate the local people, you commit large-scale genocide. Outside of that, it's very hard to conquer their spirit and make them subservient. And mental colonization, while it is present among some Palestinians and some Arab leaders, as I mentioned earlier, certainly among the common people in the streets here, I'm speaking to you from Bethlehem, there are, you know, I'm hearing bombing in the settlements nearby, and the sirens blowing, and yet I see Palestinians out in the streets basically saying this is going to finally put the Palestinian cause back again on the agenda. So I think it's predictable that it would happen. As I said, maybe the timing was not known, of course, or predictable to us analysts and so forth. But the nature of it and the fact that the resistance continues to grow is predictable and is foreseeable. And again, you know, we can only, of course, advise the Zionists to stop their oppression and end their oppression, give freedom to the Palestinians, allow the refugees to return to their homes and lands. This is the only way that Jews, Christians, Muslims, everybody can live in peace. Outside of that, no amount of killing of Palestinian children or breaking into Al-Aqsa Mosque or any of their tactics will work, so to speak, to pacify millions of Palestinians.
And Julia, would you like to speak on that too? Thank you, Mr. Kumsia. On the impact of what, however today basically finishes out or plays out, we know the regime has extremely sophisticated and gets America's cream of the crop when it comes to weapons, and they're probably going to go after, needless to say, the civilian population as they always do. It seems to be their answer to try to inflict as much pain on Palestinians as possible to make them think twice. But nevertheless, resistance factions know that it's their MO not to give in and submit to the occupying regime. So today, however today plays out, what do you think its impact is going to be on Israel's ethnic cleansing campaign of Palestinians?
It's going to find itself definitely considerably weaker after this this campaign, because they're coming toe-to-toe with a resistance that is prepared, that is ready, that is unified, that is strong, and philosophically that will fight harder once its civilians continue to be attacked and killed. As to avenge their murders, as to maintain a dignified stance against their crimes of occupation and mass ethnic cleansing. But at the same time, the Zionist entity is, again, at its weakest point, at lowest morale, in a weak point politically speaking, within its government, facing internal divisions, mass judicial overhaul protests by opponents of the current prime minister administration. So we see an imbalance that Israel has never wanted to come to before, coming into this, given that it seemed to not understand in the past that attacking and killing civilians would only make the resistance fight back harder, depending on how events play out, since we're only a few hours into this this latest counter-offensive. I can't see why Israel wouldn't want to at least think twice at this point, just like it did against in the aftermath of its loss against Hezbollah post 2006.
Okay, now it says that Palestinians have rallied in the occupied West Bank city of Ramallah in solidarity with resistance fighters. And just earlier, we saw more breaking news that Israeli authorities are saying that an unknown number of hostages have been taken by resistance factions back into the besieged Gaza Strip. Mr. Kumsi, this new far-right extreme cabinet that we're seeing, led by Benjamin Netanyahu, we know that this new cabinet has made racist remarks, and not only it's marched into the Al-Aqsa compound. They've had Ben Gavir there making extremely volatile remarks about Palestinians, about Israelis' rights. He's led, and the whole time he's at these rallies with these settlers, they're yelling at Palestinians, tell them to go home, this is our land. This is inside the mosque compound, calling them dirty Arabs and all kinds of very demeaning remarks, very belligerent and demeaning remarks. So what does that do to, basically, when you have a member of your of that government coming into, which is a violation because you very well know Christians under the status quo, Christians and Jews are allowed to visit as tourists the Al-Aqsa Mosque, but they're not allowed to pray there, and they're not allowed to really rally there and disrespect Muslims and call them a racist names. But Ben-Gavir is doing that. And what does that do as far as leading to, I mean, we know that this operation right now is called Al-Aqsa Flood. Yet the Israelis do that, and they do it often. They do it during Muslim holidays, knowing that it's going to get a rise out of Palestinians, knowing that it's going to get a rise out of other Muslim leaders that care about the Al-Aqsa as Islam's third holiest site. But yet what? They do it anyway. What does that say about the regime itself?
Yes, I'm glad you asked this question, because we need to think with this most fascist, most radical Israeli government, what does that mean? Now, Israeli governments, subsequent governments, have always oppressed Palestinians, have always built settlements, have always encouraged, you know, extremist settlers, whether it's under Labor or Likud or any other political faction in Israel. But I think there are two losers here, and they are both the so-called right-wing Israelis like Likud, and then sometimes they use the oxymoron left Zionists. Left Zionists are also losers in this charade that they had before. And Rabin himself once said that under Labor we had more settlements than under Likud. And both the right and the left are losers, because they both come from the same mentality. And even the demonstrations that are against the judicial so-called reform in Israel were called off today, not because they are afraid for their well-being. The leaders of those demonstrations said, we're calling it off because we want to show solidarity with the settlements around Gaza and with the soldiers, with the Israeli soldiers, with the military. So they are not, they don't care about Palestinians, they don't care about human rights. But I think it's in a way a good thing that this is happening under the current government, because I can imagine if it's happening under another government like Ehud Barak or somebody else, the right wing would be screaming about the weakness of the government and about how it has set the stage for this by being weak and whatever. Now we have the most extreme government by any testimony, so they cannot claim that the losses that they are incurring are due to a weak government or a weak, you know, tough government, instead of a tough government being a weak government. So I think this is a double blow for the Israeli regime in many ways, and it will shatter the illusion of Israeli voters that when they elect ultra-right, ultra-fascist leaders, that somehow this is good for them or will bring them safety. No, it does not bring you safety to be an oppressor, period. End of story, and you should stop it.
Nice. And Julia, would you like to weigh in on that? Why commit actions, especially forget about the Occupy West Bank. Let's strictly focus on the Al-Aqsa Mosque. Why commit actions there, you know, especially if you're a cabinet member, that you will, you know, will be seen as extreme provocation unless you truly want just that, confrontation with Palestinians?
Because the most hardline elements of the Zionist occupying entity are hardwired into that, into this illusion of supremacy, into this illusion of Zionist strength, endlessly supported by Western security systems and defense weapons. So pushing themselves further into confrontation that we know they don't have the upper hand in the equation anymore is basically they're a failed political almost philosophy that they have that that's basically sending them further into downfall. So earlier you asked into what kind of course the Zionist entity might take after this confrontation. It might be the more, soft war course of the liberal wing of Zionism. But, you know, all of it is Zionism. All of it, at the end of the day, has the maintenance of the occupation and the subservience of the Palestinians and the Arabs of the region as its goal. But both of them just have different tactics in how to approach it. So we might just see a switch from the hardline tactic into the more diplomatic soft tactic following this.
And I'm going to come back to you, Mr. Kumsi, if I could. We have breaking news that the let me get this one. The Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine says this is the day the nature of resistance, dignity of Arabs is being reclaimed. Mr. Kumsi, I want to put, if I can, this question to you. Settlers, we had earlier breaking news around the Gaza Strip and settlements, are begging for help from Israeli authorities. My question to you, why let it get to this point where you have to beg for help? We know that doctors always tell us, preemptive medication or preemptive health concerns. I mean, you can not eat pizza every day until you're 50 years old where you have to ask and beg for help. You can do things the right way and not let that day culminate, which is what today, for those settlers around the besieged Gaza Strip that let their sons and daughters go climb up on that wall as snipers and pick off Palestinian protesters.
What we notice here is remarkable lack of logic, but this is not, again, totally unexpected from racists and from bigots and from supremacists, because they have blinders on and they think in a very, very narrow perspective. The narrow perspective is the perspective that, for example, Israel is superior, Israel is invincible, has the fifth strongest army in the world. They have nuclear weapons, of course, and they have unlimited support from the U.S. Taxpayers by billions of dollars and the U.S. administration by using the veto power at the U.N. to protect Israel from international law. All of this reinforces that narrow vision, that basically colored vision that allows you to see only one spectrum of color and not see the others. And I think this is something that is both silly and at the same time, I would say it is what eventually results in the undoing of colonial powers. It's what got the Roman Empire to collapse, what got, many empires to collapse is when they have that habri, that that notion of invincibility, that notion of superiority. And I think Israel suffers from that in very, very large scale. And I, you know, of course, for me personally, as a Palestinian, I tell you, I honestly wish the Israelis wake up and not have to be, pushed back by force to realize what's right. I wish they do it willingly and they do it based on human rights. But if they don't, of course, the resistance will continue and will succeed eventually in pushing them back. And I hate to see violence in general, but, you know, if they don't wake up, it's their problem, not mine. I hope and pray that the Palestinians and the international community, Palestinian leadership especially, which has been very silent, amazingly silent in Ramallah about these things. I wish they wake up. I wish the Saudi regime will wake up. I wish the Emirati and the Bahraini regime will wake up. But if they don't, again, you know, history marches on and history will leave such thugs and such despots in the dustbin of history. We've seen that in history in the past, and I hope, I pray that that people wake up.
All right, well, thank you, Mazin Kumsiye. Pleasure to have this extended conversation with you. Thank you for joining us on this rolling coverage of this retaliatory strike by Palestinian resistance against the occupying regime. Palestinian scientist and author there joining us from Bethlehem. And earlier we had Julia Qasim, and we didn't get a chance to say goodbye. But Julia, if you can hear us, thanks for joining us in this extended conversation. Julia Qasim, journalist and political analyst, joining us out of Beirut. And we're going to swing back now to Press TV correspondent in Gaza City, Ashraf Shannon. Hey there, Ashraf. Thanks for hanging out with us for the last few hours to get us such critical information on this developing story. What have you learned since we last spoke?
Well, Danny, the situation continues to be extremely tense in the Gaza Strip as the Israeli response to the barrage of rockets since the early hours of this morning has been limited somehow. And this while the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu announced that the Israeli regime is in a state of war and has called on his military commanders to call in the army reserves all over the Israeli regime. So the Israeli regime is preparing for a big battle against the Palestinian resistance fighters who managed to fire thousands of rockets so far, and also infiltrated Israeli settlements east of the Gaza Strip. And according to the Israeli media, that Hamas fighters managed to occupy seven towns and settlements east of Gaza, but I would say Hamas fighters and the resistance fighters managed to liberate those areas from Israeli occupation. Let's not forget that these areas east of Gaza are occupied Palestinian land that was stolen from Palestinians back in 1948 during Nakba or the Palestinian catastrophe. Israelis have also announced that the resistance fighters have captured dozens of Israeli soldiers and settlers, and also have killed at least seven and injured scores of Israelis during the barrage of rockets that were fired earlier today. The Israeli regime, as we've reported earlier, attacked a hospital in northern Gaza called the Indonesian Hospital in northern Gaza, completely destroyed its oxygen production facility, and killed one of the hospital employees and injured several others. They also attacked several locations in the Gaza Strip, including a home and Hamas security installations. They've also killed one Palestinian journalist, Mohammed Salhi, who was covering the clashes east of Al Buraj refugee camp earlier today. So Mohammed Salhi is the first Palestinian journalist to be killed today. He is one of dozens of Palestinians who have been killed by Israeli forces over the last 20 years. The resistance fighters, mainly Hamas, in addition to Islamic Jihad and other Palestinian resistance groups, continue to fire rockets towards the Israeli regime as far as Beersheba and Tel Aviv. The Israeli regime has been put on high alert and called on most of his Israelis to be near shelters or enter the shelters if they are close to the Gaza Strip. Some Israeli media outlets are saying that Palestinian resistance fighters have managed to infiltrate at least 14 towns or kibbutzim or settlements east of the Gaza Strip. Hamas military wing, the Zin Qassam Brigades, announced that it has taken full control of the Kerem Shalom Israeli military post, in addition to other military posts, and they've managed to attack and infiltrate the Erez checkpoint in northern Gaza. Hamas has called this operation Al-Aqsa Flood or Aqsa Deluge, Tufan Aqsa, as the main reason for their actions today was the ongoing desecration and attacks against Al-Aqsa Mosque in occupied Al-Quds by Israeli regime forces and extremist Jewish settlers, especially during Jewish holidays. And today is the last day of the Sukkot Jewish holiday, which lasted for 6 days, and this is 6 days of almost non-stop desecration of Al-Aqsa Mosque. The resistance fighters have also managed to bring in Israeli soldiers and policemen. They captured them from police stations and from military posts east of the Gaza Strip. As I said before, the Israeli regime is still in shock. And according to some media outlets, they're calling today the biggest day of shame for the Israeli regime, because no one expected what happened today. No one expected that people from Gaza, resistance fighters from Gaza, who have no advanced weapon, no advanced military training, managed to capture Israeli towns, managed to capture dozens of Israelis, while there has been hardly any resistance by the Israeli regime forces. Right now, we've learned that there are attempts by Israeli forces by using helicopter gunships to try and attract Palestinian resistance fighters who are currently roaming around, roaming the streets of Israeli towns east of the Gaza Strip. Gaza Strip is a 360 square kilometer blockaded area. It has been under Israeli blockade since 2007. And has been through four major wars and multiple military aggressions. But so far, more than 2 million inhabitants remain steadfast, and many here, you talk to anybody in Gaza, they will tell you they're so proud of the historic achievement that happened today. This is the biggest slap in the face you can give to the Israeli regime. What has happened today with the barrage of rockets and especially the infiltration of those settlements east of Gaza, and the, and as resistance fighters call it, the liberation of these towns who were occupied by Israeli forces back in 1948, where resistance fighters use guns, rockets, or bombs. This is a part of their legitimate right to fight in order to liberate their land. Their land was usurped and stolen and taken away by Israeli and Zionist settlers back in 1948, and now Palestinians want to claim it back. Let's not forget that out of the more than 2 million people live in Gaza, nearly 1.3 million are Palestinian refugees or descendants of Palestinian refugees who want to go back to their homes. They want to go back to the historic land of Palestine.
Ashraf, you're a stud. Thank you for that elaborate update there with respect to everything that's happened as of 6:30 a.m. Gaza time till right now. You summed it up very well there in that 10-minute update. I want to thank you for that. Joining us is standby for us if you could, Gaza. I'd like to introduce Fra Hughes, journalist and author and activist, joining us out of Belfast. We see breaking news on the bottom of your screen there. Multiple, practically all resistance factions have come out and said that they are in solidarity and unity and collaborating and cooperating with Hamas and the Al-Quds Brigades. And what's taking place today, have implored everyone, whether it's a resistance fighter or a lone wolf person, to carry out take up arms and fight the occupying regime. Today's operation has been dubbed the Al-Aqsa Flood. Thousands of rockets started being launched toward Israeli cities and towns as of 6:30 a.m. from the besieged Gaza Strip in response to what Palestinian resistance factions have said is ongoing Israeli atrocities against Palestinians. Fra, your thoughts on the scale, and magnitude of this operation today by Palestinian resistance factions against the Israeli regime, and how off guard it has caught the regime.
Difficult to describe when you're, 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 miles happening on the ground, but I give my unconditional support for what that's worth to the resistance, because these are the only people in the world who are fighting against this terrible, atrocious, racist, apartheid, xenophobic regime. There must be some response. Surely people around the world can understand that as the continuing Nakba every day in both the occupied territories on the West Bank and in Gaza is in full violation of UN resolutions. It's immoral. It's a cause that the world should unite behind, the right of Palestinians to defend themselves against an illegal occupation. We are witnessing this shoot-to-kill policy in the occupied territories every day, where men and women and teenagers are shot, murdered, killed and maimed and allowed to bleed out by the apartheid oppressive regime that exists through the illegal occupation of the West Bank. We see children being, young children as young as 12, being arrested in night raids in villages like Belin the other night. And I think no one should be surprised at the strength and the resolve of the Palestinian resistance.
Okay, stay with me, viewers. You're looking at live images there coming out of Gaza City. And, of course, we're in the middle of a major operation by Palestinian resistance. I'm thinking my Danny Arya, who has been covering this since news broke out. Marzi Hashimi taking over from here. Viewers, if you're just joining us, you're looking at these live images, partially live images, also other images that have taken place earlier today. Of course, the middle screen, you're looking at those images there. That was actually a tank that had been confiscated, had been taken by resistance fighters in Gaza. And lots of things have been happening already this morning, of course, from as we have been told, from about 4:30 GMT, from what I understand, that this operation started to take place. And what we have so far are at least dozens of Israelis that have been captured by resistance forces and taken back into Gaza, at least 5,000 rockets that have been launched from the Gaza Strip. Resistance forces are united with this operation. This was started by Hamas resistance forces in retaliation for the brutality that has been continually taking place by regime forces against the Palestinians. And now you're looking at these live images there coming out of Tokaram. Palestinians are taking to the street in celebration of this operation. At least what we see at the bottom of your screen, Israeli media is saying at least 300 Israelis have been hospitalized, 40 of them in critical condition. This has been a surprise attack, multi-pronged attack. And as you can see, the Palestinians there in Tokaram are on the street celebrating. This, of course, all comes after the most one of the more deadly years for Palestinians that we have been seeing almost on a daily basis. At least one individual, one Palestinian, was being killed, and sometimes more. Of course, we saw brutal attacks on various Palestinian areas throughout this year. And now we're looking at, we're in the middle of this operation where the Palestinians say they are taking retaliation for the blood loss by Palestinians and also for the incursions that we have seen continuously with Masjid al-Aqsa, al-Aqsa Mosque. Again, you're looking at these live images there out of Tokaram as Palestinians taking to the streets in celebrations in their cars, walking, waving their hands, and hoping that this is a breaking point, that the regime and its repressive measures will be subsiding. Again, live images there out of Tokaram as Palestinians are celebrating what is going on. We have had, of course, various situations take place during this day already. As I said earlier, several of the settlements near Gaza have been taken over by the Palestinian resistance. Now, this is actually even being reported by Israeli media. There was now, of course, the multi-pronged attack totally surprised the regime in Tel Aviv. Now, the Hamas chief, as you were saying, this Operation Al-Aqsa flood, they wanted to flood all areas, basically, spread throughout Palestine, occupied Palestinian territories. And as you're seeing there, the Hamas chief, Ismail Haniyeh, has said that this has started in Gaza, but should spread everywhere. And various situations that are taking place in Ashkelon. There was a large fire that had broken out. We saw settlers running after missiles have been shot towards them. Again, you're looking at now on the left side of your screen, live images coming out of Gaza, again, where we can see some explosions that have taken place. Of course, what Ashraf Shannon had said earlier, that the Israeli planes, he kept hearing them circling, and we're waiting for the situation, exactly what's going to happen. We know that this is a major breakthrough for the Palestinians, and of course, we have seen more and more solidarity with the Palestinian resistance, and obviously, this was well-coordinated and well-planned. Again, left side of your screen, out of Gaza right now, and also out of Tokaram on the right side of your screen, as the as Palestinians take to the street and celebrate. And of course, the reality is that this has been a very, very difficult year for Palestinians throughout the occupied territories, West Bank, and, of course, as always, Gaza. But especially we have seen several operations. We saw brutal operations just months ago against Jenin, the refugee camp, and it has been continual continual attacks on the Palestinians throughout this year, one of the most deadly years for Palestinian fatalities. And the resistance continued to give statement after statement and saying that they would not tolerate this continued oppression against the people, nor would they tolerate these incursions against the Al-Aqsa Mosque. And today we are looking at response from the Palestinian resistance, as you're looking there now. A live image is coming out of Gaza City, as Ismail Haniyeh, the head of Hamas, has said now that this operation will spread all over amongst the Palestinians. And we heard others from other Palestinian resistance groups giving a call for all Palestinians to arm themselves and to defend the land and their sovereignty. What we do know that so far this year, we know that at least 256 Palestinians have been killed. We have seen many, many incursions, lots of violence against Palestinians throughout this year, and now we're looking at a major response. Let me cross back over. I believe I have Ashraf. Ashraf, thanks so much. I'm just joining you. You've been here a while, and please stay safe. Ashraf, bring us up into the latest information that you have, please. Okay, viewers, you're looking at these live images coming out of Gaza City there as we see some explosions, some plumes of smoke taking, obviously going up in the air. And we're watching the situation very closely in Gaza. And, of course, everyone just waiting for the next reaction and what is going to happen. All right, you're looking again at these live images. So I'm going to cross back over to Habib Jaghouri, journalist and activist, joining me.